And good evening, and hopefully you're mightily blessed and growing in your intimacies and in the Lord and in the love of Him. Tonight we're going to talk about Job and how God turns suffering and loss into joy and gain, even though it seems almost impossible sometimes. I do have a little PowerPoint information here, and I have a little handout for some of the, it's many of the scriptures. I apologize that it looks a little, I'm going to give those out to you. Sure. It looks a little fuzzy, but it's not. It's just that it's a copy of some of the 3D wording on there. So, but I think you can follow along. And anyone who's listening on the audio, the whole of the PowerPoint is also posted on the web, or will be posted on the web fairly soon. We're a little delayed in our postings. Carolyn has just moved and just now found her computer and just now got it set up and plugged in. So she'll be posting some of the things that we're a little bit behind on, but that'll all work out in due time. So just to keep her sanity first, we want that to last. So that'll work out. In the account of Job, we see a man who had everything, and we're going to go over just all of what that everything is. He was a man who loved God, and he was also blessed mightily by God. Satan, of course, didn't like any of that. And Satan actually challenged God in regards to Job. Satan accused Job. If you believe, I mean, Satan the accuser. It truly is his name. He accused Job of loving God only because Job had been blessed by God. And he kind of suggests, he intimates a little bit that God used those blessings to bribe Job into loving him. You know, so Satan said, of course he loves you. He has everything in the world. God proves his point in this account, and God allows things to occur. And in this account, God allowed Satan to torment Job. But he did say, you can't take his life. There's a lot of things you can do, but you can't take his life. See, so God sets the standard. You think you're powerful. So here's God talking to Satan. Now, remember now, Satan thinks he's everything. He thinks he's equal to God. That's why he was thrown out of heaven. He said, no, they're going to worship us. I'm equal, co-equal with you. He just forgot one important point. God made him. So he does have one up on him. But that's when he was loose for an angel of light, but his disobedience cast him away from God. So I love it when God says to Satan, okay, you can do that, but you can't take his life. You see, God still is more powerful. God is still in control, and Satan has to come under that submission of that. So Satan gladly obliges and throws it all at Job, causing him to lose everything, even his health. But Job refuses to stop loving God. Job is tormented. Also, he complains. He questions God, etc., but he never stops loving God and acknowledging God's greatness. We all know the end of the story. Even though Job lost everything, God restored him many times over. But before we go into the exact scriptures and what the Lord wants to bring out tonight, I just want to remind everyone, Job never got his original kids back. He never got his original servants back. He never got his original, I mean, and some people who were in the farming business and stuff, I mean, they got their favorite yaks and their favorite cows and stuff. I mean, these things, I remember in the summer going up to my uncle's farm. I mean, you started to love these cows. He named them all. And they all had unique little characteristics. And you could, after a while, start figuring them out, who was who, and all this kind of stuff. You knew Molly from, you know, all the rest of them and that kind of stuff. So they become part of you. But Job never got those animals back. Not the originals. He didn't get his original anything back. He did lose everything. So it's not like, oh, I can just stand this for a while because I'm going to get it all back. So we got to be careful. He did lose everything, and he never got his originals back. You think of that with your kids. God took away all your kids. You don't get your originals. You might get more, but you don't get your originals back. I mean, there was a lot to suffer and a lot to lament. There was a lot of loss here. This is a reality check. So we're talking about serious, deep stuff here, not just some fluffy little Bible story. This is very real, and I hope that we understand that. But he did receive many times over a new and a wonderful life. And you see, we got to see there's always a thread through all of the Bible. It's not just stories from some religion. There's so much powerful meaning here. You see, when we really have to lose everything So you're going to lose your life to gain it. We got to lose everything, and you're not going to get that original garbage back. You are going to get a new life with God. You're going to have a new outlook. You're going to have a new way of thinking, a new way of feeling, a new way of wanting. It is new. You got to leave the old behind. So, I mean, even in this, he's giving us, he's saying, look, I'm telling you, you got to leave your old behind. You got to leave that Adam nature back there. I know it's the only thing you've known. I know it's what you love. It's how you think, how you feel, what you want. But if you come to me, I'm going to give you something new. You're going to have better than what I'm taking away. Now, even though it was taken away, Job really, literally gave it up. You see, he didn't hang on to it. And his response, we're going to cover the account this week, and next week we're going to cover a little bit more on some lessons from his friends' responses to what went on and how we can grow and be enlarged in our understanding of the Lord. But I just want to remind us of that. Job, even though he lost everything, he never got all the originals back, even though he got it new. Now, God is great and gracious in all his ways. He loves us, and he knows the depth of our suffering. Our problem is that we don't wait long enough for God to fix or restore what's broken or lost. We get really antsy. And Mark relayed a story recently during our prayer time before church about a woman that was in up there in Upper State, New York. I think it was New York. Upper State, New York. And my gosh, all those floods and the rain and everything up there, and she was really blessing the Lord, and her house was okay, and her basement was okay, and the stuff on her land was okay. And then all of a sudden she thought, oh my gosh, I have a ton of stuff in the storage unit. She had two storage units. So she went down to the storage unit after the rain stopped. The storage units were covered to the roof with water. Every single thing that was of value, all sorts of stuff, and furnitures, and the stuff that you store, and your pictures, and all those things that you store in storage units when you don't have enough in your house. See, we're so blessed. We don't have enough to cram this stuff in our house. We got to rent storage units, but anyways, besides that. But she had good stuff in her storage unit. And she went down and is covered with water. She said she covered her mouth because she screamed, ah! I mean, this was stuff she lost. It was gone. Now, she could doubly lament because it was a commercial storage unit, so the insurance would take care of it, right? She opted out and didn't get the insurance because it was in an area that hadn't flooded in a couple hundred years, so she wasn't worried. They had big drainage, yeah, big drainage systems in the ground. You know, it wasn't going to flood there. I mean, they were set up. This was a no-flood area. No one got the flood insurance, even though it was offered. So it was like, wow. So she could be doubly troubled. I not only lost everything, I'm stupid. I could have had at least a reimbursement. Even if I couldn't get something of the original back, I could at least buy something. And then I started thinking to myself, and then put it back in the storage unit. But anyways, whatever. But what I'm saying is that sometimes we don't wait long enough, so we have terrible trials like this. Now, Mark happened to remind the woman, yes, you lost everything in a flood. I lost everything through the financial crash. So which way does it make any difference which way you lost it? It's gone. The stuff you loved, the stuff you touched, the stuff you bought, it's gone. Now, you can have an opportunity, just like Job did, to curse God and die, like his wife told him. You can be angry, you can be upset. I'm a good person, I do everything for God. Look at all I've done for you, God. How come you even let this stuff happen to me? We're going to miss it if we don't listen to some of the things that was going on here with Job. You see, God allowed these things to be recorded for a reason. Not just some religious ideation written on a paper by some monk sitting in a cave somewhere. This is revealed by God to the heart of man, and they recorded it. So that we could learn, not just by reading it. Because if you learn just by reading it, boy, wouldn't that be nice? But then you'd use your Adam nature and figure out what it is, and then you'd have even more fights in the Christian community here and all over the planet. He said, that's going to be by the Spirit you're going to understand, and there's going to be revelation. It's not just by what is written. So that's going to open a door as you read it, but the understanding is going to have to come from the Lord. And that's what we ask, that understanding go to each and every one of us. So sometimes what we do is, even though these things are gone, we don't give God enough time. We say, hurry up, I lost it last week, I want it restored this week. Wait a minute. That isn't how it is. Sometimes God's just going to give you courage and strength. He isn't even going to give you the stuff. He He's going to give you the courage and the strength. He's going to give you mercy. He's going to fill your heart with such a way that you will then be able to minister to others who did lose stuff. And this is even what God asks you sometimes. You lose everything. God fills you with an ability to minister to others who lost everything, and then He turns around and gives them everything back.
Oh,
no, that's not fair. Well, guess what? Life's not fair. God isn't, He doesn't have this balancing scale that we do. Tit for tat, 50-50. This is ridiculous. It's not 50-50. A marriage isn't 50-50. Some days it's going to be 100% on one and zero on another, and then reverse, then 60-40, and then 90-10, and then 20-80. And if you try and keep track, you're going to go nuts, and it ain't right. It's supposed to be flow. What the need is, God will cover it. When He's down at the 20s, you better be flying up at the 80s, honey. And vice versa. Boy, oh boy, it has a lot for us to learn. So sometimes He's going to give us strength and courage to get through. We're still going to have a new life, even if you don't get new stuff. And that new life is going to give you joy. That new life, that new way of looking and thinking and being and doing, that will make up for an awful lot of suffering and loss if we do it God's way. Now, Joni Erickson Tata was paralyzed in a diving accident when she was only like 15 years old. She never got the use of her body restored. Never. And she prayed and prayed and prayed. And she says, she'll tell you, just write your books, and then when you hear her speak, she'll tell you she was really ticked off with God for quite a significant length of time, not just for a week. She was really angry. Why did this happen to me? And then why haven't you healed me? Why didn't you prevent it? You could have put your hand there. Every other thing in the world. 1,000 people dive into a lake, and they go home and live their lives. She dives in and breaks a neck. Paralyzed from the neck down for the rest of her life. She must be up in her 50s by now, maybe 60s.
She's about 63.
Yeah, 60s.
Wow.
From age 15. Never being able to use your hands, which means she's never been able to wipe her nose or her bottom. She's never been able to feed herself or get dressed. She's never been able to put her arms around her husband.
She says she feels the glory of God every night, though.
Oh, my, my.
Because of her suffering, yep. God has blessed her with His presence.
Extra.
Even more extraordinary.
See, so if we look to how God is supposed to replace something, see, she lost the use of her arms and legs. She would be a sullen, depressed, ugly woman waiting for God to give her back the use of her body. He says, no, I'm going to do something different. I'm going to give you something better than the use of your body. And if you sat down and talked to her, she says, as much as I would like that, this is so much better. And you cannot say that when you're walking. You can't. But God blessed her with a determined spirit and a whole new life that she says would never have existed if she were not paralyzed from the neck down. She's a singer, an artist, a speaker, a philanthropist. She's married, and she and her husband started an organization that repairs old wheelchairs and delivers them to paralyzed youths in poor countries. Wow. What was taken away in one way was totally restored in another way. So be careful that we don't think this is what you need to do, God, and I'm not going to be happy until you do it. Be careful how we pray. God does not jump through the hoop for us. We jump through the hoop for Him. And yet He's so good, He's not really playing the jump through the hoop game. He really isn't. It's just so powerful. So don't try and figure out God. Just let Him work His marvelous ways in your life. Now, there's a couple of slides I want to go over, and I want to. You have the handout of what the scriptures are. I printed them out tonight, and a text for consideration tonight is in Job, chapter 3, verse 23-26. This is very, very powerful. I like how this is said. Well, I just wanted to think on this here. This is from the New King James Version for those who are reading different things. Now, I do have to confess, one of the chaplains in Civil Air Patrol did a presentation one time on some things on Job. I asked him to send that to me because I liked his pictures in it. So I took some of his pictures rather than trying to look them up myself. So I have to give credit to Chaplain Marcus Taylor for some of the pictures that are in here. So I thank him for that. But the question is, this is what he's saying. This is what Job is saying. Why is light given to a man whose way is hidden and whom God has hedged in? You know, what's all this all about? For my sighing comes before I eat, and my groanings pour out like water. For the thing I greatly feared has come upon me, and what I dreaded has happened to me. I am not at ease, nor am I quiet. I have no rest, for trouble comes. Most of us would probably cry the same thing. And you know, there's nothing wrong with that. That is going to be the human's first response, even if you're holy and love God. And if you say it isn't, you're probably lying. But you see, if you really love the Lord and you're led by His Spirit, you may not even go that deep, but you're not going to stay there for long. In the Lord, that's a guarantee. You'll be able to rise up from that. Now, I want to just go over kind of like a little bit on the back, a little background here on Job, just so we kind of remember what was going on. Job, in chapter 1, verses 1 to 3. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was, listen what he was. That man was perfect and upright and one that feared God and eschewed evil. So he ran away from evil. He put it away. He was upright. He was perfect. He feared God. I mean, you know, it's like what you're supposed to be. He was everything that God was asking people. Now, he wasn't a Christian because he was before Christ. But he was back there serving God according to what was there as God was leading the people at that time in the history of this great work of God from the beginning until the end. So, I mean, it does give a good description of who he was. So it sets us up to know this guy wasn't some shyster. He wasn't someone who got his money by evil ways, and he wasn't some politician in Washington. And you know, he wasn't any of these things that are out there. And I'm not coming against any politicians in Washington. I was just throwing that out because we understand some of the system, the way it works. But it kind of sets us up to know that he was a very good and a godly man. And there were born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. His substance also was 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 yoke of oxen.
Yeah, yoke is 2.
Yeah.
That's 1,000.
Well, whatever. Okay. And 500 she asses, meaning the donkeys. And a very great household, meaning a lot of workers. He had a lot of employees. So that this man was the greatest of all the men of the East. That was a known world at the time. So really, he was as well the greatest man in the world. Now that is very powerful to think of. That's a great description now. Now this is the one who lost everything. This wasn't some thief who deserved it or whatever. So it sets us up to see what's going on here. He was the greatest of all the people in the East. Now how rich? I kind of want to give us a little idea before we get some of the things. He was very rich. He had 7,000 sheep. So in today's world, we could kind of say he was in like the manufacturing business. You know, because the sheep, and they shear the sheep, and they make the clothes and stuff like that. So 7,000 sheep would sort of be like someone being in the manufacturing business today. Then he had 3,000 camels. Now the camels were used because they could go a long distance, because they can go a long way without water. They fill up and they can go a long way, especially in the desert area. So you could kind of say he owned an export business. He could actually take those goods that he made and he could put them a long way with the camels. So you know, see, it's not just numbers. He had 500 yoke of oxen. So you could really say he had a farming business because the oxen were yoked together. And they were used to pull the little hand plows, and they would plow up the fields so they could plant all the grain and the things that they were growing. So you could say he had a farming business too. And he had 500 female donkeys. Now, the donkeys can't go as far as the camels. So you could say he had a transportation business. So the donkeys, he could send it out locally. And the export business, he could send it out further into other countries. So he was a real, real businessman. Job was rich. So you could kind of wrap it up and say that he was a business entrepreneur. He was also a herder, a clothing manufacturer. He was into trucking, farming, and food distribution. Now you add all that up, and in today's world, roughly, if that was with today's value on the numbers and everything that was being done, his worth was about an estimated annual income of about $65 million. So he was rich. I mean, that just puts it, I just want to put it in context to us, because when we say, you know, 7,000, you know, sheep and 5,000 camels and 3,000 camels or whatever, we kind of lose it. But I want to get it in a little perspective here. Job was an extremely rich man. So when he lost something, it wasn't just a few sheep. When you add up what he lost, it was about, in today's dollar value, about $65 million. Boy, I tell you, I don't know about you, I'd be ticked off. What the heck? Of course, what would we be saying? Oh God, all that money that I could use for your ministry. You know, I mean, oh, he lost this, whatever. Job was living large. But he went from class to crash in an instant. And it was really something because, and now, instead of Job riding on the high places of the earth, like he was, this is our precious Job now. He's sitting there with his buddies. He's got boils all over his hands and all of that kind of stuff. Now, I want us to turn to Job, the first chapter again, and go down to verse 7. I want to give a couple of details of how it's recorded in the scriptures, of how Satan was allowed to kind of rattle Job's cage here. Job, the first chapter, starting with verse 7, 7 to 12. Listen to this. This was when it said the sons of God and Satan came to the meeting. Job, the first chapter. Yeah. It says the sons of God, meaning that those are the fallen angels, and Satan came before God. And verse 7, and the Lord said to Satan, from where do you come? Now I want to clarify something. This is the God that knows all things. Why in the world is he saying, hey, yo, where did you come in from? Don't you think God knew? Satan goes and he says, then Satan answered the Lord and said, listen to this, from roaming about on the earth and walking around on it. Now that answers the question if there's evil spirits on the planet right now. Yes, there are. That old adversary in the spiritual plane is right here. He roams around looking so he see who he can get, rob, kill, and destroy and devour them bit by bit. But God asks him, where did you come in from? How'd you get here? God asks questions not because he doesn't know the answer. It's because he wants us to answer because we're accountable for every word that comes out of our mouths. He wanted Satan to answer that. Very often, like when God said to Adam, Adam, where are you? He knew exactly where he was. He wanted Adam to say it. Adam said, we're hiding. He wanted it to come out of Adam's mouth. He will often ask us a question, not because he doesn't know the answer. He knows our heart better than we do. He wants us to answer it. When he says, why are you doing that thing? Where is it that you have come from? Whose hand have you put to that? What have you said to that woman? What have you done with that man? These are the kind of things, these are questions that God will say, where is your heart in this? Where is the purity of this thing? He'll ask you, is there any purity in what you're about to do? Is there any sin in what you're about to do? Like God needs to know the answer? No, we need to know the answer, and he wants us to answer it. So that's why he often, you'll see questions and people say, well, if God knows so much, why is he asking so many questions? Because every man, woman and child, is accountable for what comes out their mouth. God says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So guess what? If you, as a man, you as a woman, and you as a child, have a heart that's full to the abundantness of God and full of his Spirit, then what's going to be more frequently coming out of your mouth is not going to be sin. It's going to be truth. It's going to be life. It's going to be the things that are encouraging and growing and changing. It's going to be the things that are going to pierce the person's heart and develop their relationship with God, not with you as the old Holy One. But sometimes God will use you, and people will become very close to you and ask for advice and ask for prayer and ask for this kind of stuff understanding. I didn't understand this scripture. Do you have any understanding? Yes, share that. But be so careful, because it's so easy to get involved and start loving and attached to the one you see instead of the one you don't see. It's an error many people make. We saw that. We've seen that all the way right back in the beginning when the Bible was written. Some are of Apollos and some are of Paul. They were just enthralled with the one who was speaking, enthralled with the one who was doing in front of them. Don't do that. Fight it within yourself. And make sure that you encourage others. Don't look to me. Listen, that great feeling you had, that great understanding you had, that great growth you had, it might have come through my mouth, but it wasn't from me. It was from God. So get on your knees and thank God that you got what you got. Now, you can be appreciative of the one that God has called for teaching, for prayer, for ministry, whatever it is in the moment. Yeah. That's good. But you don't want to emulate them. None of us are God. God is God. We are just vessels of God. We're like the tape recorder, so to speak. You know, he has to put it on us so we can come out. We have to be careful. I just want to bring that point up when he asked that. Verse 8, "And the Lord then said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job? For there's no one like him on the earth, and a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil.' Then Satan answered the Lord, 'Does Job fear God for nothing?'" So he goes, yeah, I've looked at Job, and he loves you. You think it's for nothing? You think he's just doing this out of his own, is what he's saying? And then he goes on and he says, verse 10, "Hast thou not made a hedge about him and his house and all that he has on every side?" So he's saying, and you'll hear this, people will say, "Oh, you got it easy." How many times have you heard people say, "You've got it easy. You don't have it as hard. God loves you because he has something special with you. You love him because he's blessed you. I don't love him as much because he hasn't blessed me. If God blessed me as much as he blessed you, I'd probably love him that way too." That's what people think. Right here on this earth today is exactly out of the pit of hell. It's exactly what Satan was saying. And he said, "Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land." And here Satan says, "But you put forth your hand now, and touch all that he has, and he'll surely curse thee to thy face." And then he says, "Then the Lord said to Satan, 'Behold, all that he," meaning Job, "all that he has is in your power now." He said, I'm letting this happen. See, God is so powerful and in control. He says, "I'm going to let something happen now. I'm going to give all that he has in your hands. You do whatever you want." And God knows he was full of evil and murder. And that's exactly what he did. Evil and murder and killing and theft and robbery and despair and junk and depression. Oh, yeah. And God said, all that he has is in your power right now. Only do not put forth your hand on him." So he couldn't touch his body, you see. You don't touch him. So Satan departed from the presence of the Lord, because God is proving a point back then. Not that God has to prove anything to anyone. He is using this lesson. Again, Satan thinks he's so smart. God's using him again as a pawn. "You're so foolish, but I'm going to use it. Yes, I give you permission to go to Job." And guess what? Satan could never have touched Job. Now, Job could have brought things upon himself with foolishness, but Satan could never have touched Job without the permission of God. So be careful when things come upon you. It may not always be your sin, and it may not always be the sin of someone else. These things could be God allowing Satan himself to cause some of this destruction and disruption, not on a permanent basis, not for permanent, but to get a message across, to do something, to strengthen you, to change you, to get what the junk is out of the way, maybe, to get something new. So be careful when you accuse someone of sin, or you accuse everything of the devil, or everything of your own sin. You've got to find out from God. That's why when something goes devastatingly wrong, quickly get before the Lord. Say, "God, is there any sin in my camp? Forgive me, Lord, if there is. I don't know, but if there is, show me. And if anyone is sinning against me on purpose, I forgive them already. Help me in this situation. But if this is of you, God, it's going to be to my good. Help me to bear it." Powerful, powerful, powerful. Now, Job did lose it all, but he never blamed God. Let's see what Job says. Continue now in verse 13 down to 22. "Now it happened on the day," this is the day, so it was he went from class to crash in an instant. "It happened on the day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house." Now eating and drinking wine indicates there was a feast of some sort. Could have been a birthday, an anniversary, celebrating the harvest, or in other words, they just weren't having a little meal, a regular meal. What they were having, this indicates, was some big blast going on where they had some good celebration in one of the sons' houses. And that a messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen," remember he had all those oxen, "the oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them. And the Sabians," which is an enemy crowd there, "attacked and took them." Oh boy. So now his oxen and his donkeys are gone. The Sabians took them. They also slew the servants with them with the edge of the sword. And I alone have escaped to tell you. Now look, God let one escape so that there be no error, that there be no false report. This is an individual who saw it with his own eyes. I alone have escaped to tell you. See, God set this up. Satan wasn't allowed to do what these Sabians or whatever. Just one person was allowed to escape. But all of the donkeys and all of the oxen and all of the servants with them are now gone. While he was still speaking, meaning the servant who was the only one who escaped, another servant also came and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. I alone have escaped to tell you." Another one came back to say, "Now all the other stuff's gone. Now all the sheep are gone and the servants that were with them." Verse 17, while he was still speaking, another also came and said, "The Chaldeans formed three bands, and they made a raid on the camels and took them and slew the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." Whoa. Do we have enough bad news yet? I mean, he just lost his manufacturing business, his farm business, his export business, and his domestic travel business here. Whoa. It's like everything, every single thing that was there to make money, $65 million just went down the hole right then and there one day, all at once. And then look at verse 18. Talk about the sword to the heart. While this servant was still speaking, another also came and said, "Your sons and your daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And behold, a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house. And all at one point, it all fell in on the young people, and they died. I alone have escaped to tell you." Whoa. Verse 20, then Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head. Because that's what they did back in those days to show tremendous lamenting and tremendous sorrow, tremendous mourning. And he fell to the ground. And he, what does it say in your Bible?
Worshipped
God. All of this went wrong. He just lost $65 million and all of his children. And he lamented. Now, I like the first one because he ripped his robes, he shaved his head. It wasn't done in a second. It took time to do that. He was discomforted. He was miserable. He was alone. He was broke. He was lonely. He was sad. He was a grieving father that just lost all his children. He fell to the ground and
worshipped.
Whoa. And he said, Job said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." Verse 22, through all this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. I study this, I read it, I meditate on it, and I go, I'm nowhere near there yet, God. I'm nowhere. My stupid blower didn't work a few weeks ago, and I throw it out of the shed and come running out of the shed and kick it. Oh, yeah, you're really ready, Linda. You're really ready. You're really holy there. Now, I'm not beating myself on the back here and beating myself up. I'm just saying, wow, when I read this, it's like, wow, you got to have God's power in you. That wasn't Job. See, Adam nature couldn't do any of this. What that tells me is that now he didn't have God's nature in him because Jesus hadn't come yet. But he worshiped that God. He was going to God. He's the one, he was absorbing everything God would give him because he blessed God, he obeyed God, he honored God. So he got a lot from God. But God proved the point to Satan, to Job, and to us. Job loved God more than he loved his stuff and the important people in his life. Now, that doesn't mean you throw away all your money and walk away from your family. It doesn't mean that. This is something he didn't do. This was done to Job. And look at his response to it. He fell on the ground and worshiped God, and he did not blame God. Now, look at verse 2 real quickly. Start with verse 2. And again, the same thing. Satan comes to the Lord, and he does the same thing. And he says in verse 2 of the second chapter, the Lord said to Satan, and where have you come from? Again, he's asking the question, because there's an accountability before Satan. You also have an opportunity to tell the truth and tell a lie, too. But Satan answered the Lord and said, from roaming about on the earth and walking around on it. And the Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man. He's telling him that again, fearing God and turning away from evil. Only this time when God said it, it was proven right there. See, God can say something, well, I don't believe it. Well, he gave you something to look at so you can believe it. When he called Job an upright man, he ain't going to leave me. Job just proved it because it just happened to him in one day. He still holds fast his integrity, although you, meaning God speaking to Satan, incited me against him to ruin him without cause. So you come up here, Satan, and you say, look, you just bribed him. If you take everything away, he'll still curse you. And God says, no, he won't. This is what my people are made of. Verse 4, and Satan answered the Lord and said, now he's going to get a little deeper. He goes, skin for skin. Yes, all that a man has, he will give for his life. However, put forth, now Satan says, okay, he lost things. Now God, put forth your hand and touch his bone and his flesh. Now get to his own physical body. Now he'll curse you to your face. So the Lord said to Satan, behold, he goes, I give you permission. See, he couldn't do anything without it. He's in your power. Only you spare his life. You can touch his body now, but you can't take his life, meaning you can't kill him. Then Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took a potsherd, which is a little broken piece of a clay pot, to scrape himself while he was sitting among the ashes. Then his wife comes over and says to him, do you still hold fast your integrity? Go ahead, please, curse God and die. Her remedy was, let's get rid of this. Just say, that's it, I'm done. And you can see that picture shows, you know, boils and stuff like that all over him. And just they didn't have a lot of water in the Middle East, still don't. So they would put oil on their skin because of all the dust. And you know how you're just working in the yard. You got dust and dirt all over you. Well, you can't take a shower. Can you imagine mowing your lawn and not being able to take a shower? All that sweat and dirt and dust. So in lieu of that, they would take some oil. And they would rub oil on their arms, their neck, and their face. And then they would just take like the edge of a broken, a pot that they broke specifically, or a sharp piece of wood or something like that. And they would then just scrape it off. Well, just think of him. He's got dirt and junk. I mean, all of us, some of us are nurses in here. Can you imagine scraping over them boils and trying to get around them and getting a little of the dirt off, and there's nothing to wash them with. You put oil on, it's going to get more dirt. I mean, they would be bursting. Some of them would be pussy. Some of them would be dripping. Some of them would be infected. And anyone ever had a little boil or a little carbuncle or something? That sucker is sore. You don't even have to touch it. It just aches and aches. From his head to his feet, he was covered with these boils. Oh my gosh. Verse 10, when his wife said, oh, curse God and die. But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Women speak. Shall we indeed? Now look at this. I want you to go through your heart with this now. It should pierce your heart. He says, shall we indeed accept good from God and not accept adversity? Are we only going to take his blessings and not any challenges? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Verse 11. Now when Job's three friends heard all of this, adversity had come upon him. They came, each one, from his own place. Eliphaz the Temanite came, Bildad the Shuhite came, and Zophar the Naamathite came. And they made an appointment together to come to sympathize with him and comfort him. Now, if they were his friends, in all likelihood, they weren't servants. They were other rich men in the area. So when they heard in one day he lost $65 million, I often wonder why some of the reasons. We'll go into that a little bit next week on what his friends were talking. They're wondering, is God going to do this to me? I'm not even as good as you are, Job. What's going to happen to me? You know, that kind of thing. I'm just wondering if that's some of their motive there. But they were compassionate. They loved him. And they came when they heard all of this calamity, all of his money gone in a day, and all of his family gone in a day. And when they lifted up their eyes at a distance, and they didn't recognize him, meaning they looked at him and go, oh my God, that's Job, but they didn't recognize him. They raised their voices and wept. And each of them tore his robe, and they threw dust over their heads toward the sky, which is a way of showing lament. They threw dust on their heads. Then they sat down on the ground with him, look at this, for 7 days and seven nights, with no one speaking a word to him, for they saw that his pain was very great. Wow. Wow. 7 days and seven nights. Some of us can't have 5 minutes of quiet. They said not a word for 7 days and seven nights because they saw how, and yeah, because they saw how great his pain was. They knew they couldn't speak. There was nothing they could say. He must have been moaning and groaning and lamenting. It wasn't just that he said, now he said, God is great. I'm going to worship him. But that didn't stop him from crying. He lost his kids. His kids were dead and gone. 10 of them. Gone. His money's gone. His way of providing for himself and his children, it's all gone. Now he can't even provide for his wife. He is now, as of today, a pauper. That's tough back in those days. There weren't any giveaway programs like we got all over our country. You didn't have food or water. You usually died. If you didn't have access to it and you had no money, you couldn't buy it from someone else. So here's our Job, and that's the picture of him. He is in some deep conditions. So we can kind of say, when life falls apart on you in spite of all your efforts to maintain, when things go so totally bad that recovery seems to be out of the question, when you make a mistake or a number of mistakes that you thought you would never make, when your needs continue to outgrow your resources exponentially and unproportionally, you're working as hard as you can and you still can't make ends meet. When death invades and devastates your world by taking someone you love, when you wake up one day and realize you've allowed Satan to draw you so far away from God, it seems as if you never knew him. What do I do now? When those things are in your life, what do I do now? There is an answer. God is the one who has provided the answer. Our Adam nature wants restitution. We want revenge. We want God to do whatever miracle it takes to bring us back the next day into our comfort zone. You may not get your comfort zone for 20 years. I don't know. I hope not. But if that's a choice of God, then that needs to be a choice of you. And I'm not talking willy-nilly, some robot following God without understanding. You better be on your face in prayer and fasting and finding out what is going on, God. I need to know if this is an attack of Satan, I need relief. Get him away from me. If this is sin, I need to know what it is. I need to get beyond it. Help me, Lord. Help me, Lord. So it's a matter of coming out. In Psalm 27 is where we can get some of our answer to some of this. Psalm 27, verse 13 and 14 gives us, it talks about something we don't like, waiting on the Lord. And we're going to see that as we cover a little bit more in Job next week, about how he had to wait on the Lord. I mean, there was a length of time here before he got, it's not like, oh, that's it, 65 million gone today, I'll get 100 and, you know, 10 million tomorrow, or 120 million tomorrow, 130, whatever that is, mathematically, top of my head, I'm not too good, I'm tired tonight, but I'll get 130 million next week, he's going to double it. You don't know. Job didn't know he was going to get anything back. He thought, that was it, I'm done. I have no money, and my kids are gone, but I love God, and because he's God, I don't know what he's going to do, but he's going to do something that's going to be okay for me. He had no way of knowing that God was going to double it. We know it, because we already read it. He didn't know in that time. He had ample opportunity to hate God, to remove himself from God, to speak against God, and to be miserable sot all the rest of his life. He didn't. Without knowing what was going to, without having a thing returned to him, he still loved God. So in Psalm 27, verse 13 to 14, it says, I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. It's the here and now. I'd have died a thousand deaths, is what it's saying, if I didn't understand and believe that there's goodness in the Lord. So the admonition, the encouragement, the message in Psalm 27 is wait on the Lord. And then be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Whoa. Our precious Joseph is up there in prison. He's having a tough time. He's lost all his money. He lost his house. He's lost his family. That's it. He has no job. He has no income. The debt is rising. There's no way out from underneath it. He hasn't seen his baby. His baby is over 2 years old and hasn't seen her since she was 5 months old. He's not held her. He's not kissed her. He doesn't know who she is or what's going on or anything. He is at a distance. He is a person just like Job. And he is lamenting. He hasn't gotten over his lamenting. I am in hopes that truly he will not faint, that he will come to this understanding, that he can believe God, that God is going to come to his rescue. I just don't know how it's going to be manifested. We cannot reframe up this thing that we think, oh, I am going to be happy because God is going to spring me out of prison. All of a sudden, a miracle is going to happen, and everything is going to disappear, and something's going to happen. I'm not even going to have a sentence. No! I don't know what's going to happen. There's things in the works to mitigate that situation, and that's what our prayer is, to lessen that. But it ain't going to go away. He isn't going to get his original house back. He is never going to get 2 years of his baby's life back. Now, thank God, his wife has been a darling of a wife, and she's taken videos of every single thing of that child from the day of her birth. Her first word, her first step, her first bite of oatmeal, her first sippy cup, every single thing is on video. So he will be able to see it, but he hasn't been able to be there for it. Extremely sad. The man is covered in grief. I remember that Sunday when God, the Spirit of God came upon me, and I lamented because I was feeling his aloneness and the depth of his grief and the depth of his loss. But he has to get out from that feeling. We need to pray him up into this relationship with God where he can actually breathe up there in that prison. Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage. Pray that Joseph would be of good courage. And he shall strengthen thine heart. I say, wait on the Lord. Now, why wait? And there's a little, one of those little acronyms there, wait, W-A-I-T, that we can remember. Why wait? God's anyhow, any place, anywhere, power is out there. W, witness. The W of wait, witness the wonderful, almighty power of God. It is in our lives. We need to see it in others, and we need to know it in ours. A of wait. It allows you the atmosphere to see God's power at his best. This is one of the most powerful things we can say. In the waiting on the Lord, not just waiting nilly-willy, in the waiting on the Lord, it brings you into an atmosphere and in the presence of God. That is the only place you're going to be able to wait appropriately and not die a thousand deaths. Waiting on the Lord is the only place. You get in that waiting room because that's the only place you're going to have what you need to get through your trial, your temptation, whatever loss, whatever grief, whatever challenge, whatever horror is in your life at that time. The I in wait, in the Word, it says, in due season you will reap. If you faint not, don't go back to square one. Don't start this marathon and keep going back to the start line and go up 10 miles and go back to the start line and go up 10 miles. You are going to be so discouraged and despairing. You need to stay in that race and you need to go on, go on, go on, go on. So in due season, you will reap. God says that. You will reap. You guys have gone through turmoil and challenge. You are reaping. You have a lovely home with all sorts of amenities that you didn't even know were going to be there. Even though one thing is taken away, another is given, and it's even greater than what was lost. In due season you will reap if you faint not. And the T of wait is the best is yet to come. And that's really true. Job is restored. Look at Job 42. And I do want to, just give me that time to just do that, Job 42, because it's so glorious what happened. Starting in verse 10, Job 42, the very last chapter there. And the Lord restored the fortunes of Job when he prayed for his friends. So he's there praying for his friends. They were a little confused on what God was doing. He was praying for them, getting them straightened out. And the Lord increased all that Job had twofold. Then all his brothers and all his sisters, meaning Job's, and all who had known him before came to him, and they ate bread with him in his house, and they consoled him and comforted him for all the evil that the Lord had brought on him. And each one gave him one piece of money and each a ring of gold. So he had stuff starting to come back in. He had a big party, he had celebration, people loving him, comforting him. He was healed. The Lord blessed the latter days of Job more than his beginning. And then he ended up with what? 14,000 sheep, if you remember, he only had 7,000. 6,000 camels, he only had 3. 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 female donkeys. And he had 7 sons and 3 daughters. God gave him 7 more sons and 3 more daughters. Now, they weren't the originals, but they were wonderful children that he did love. And he named the first Jemimah, and the second Keziah, and the third Keren Hapuch. And in all the land, no women were found so fair as Job's daughters, and their father gave them an inheritance among their brothers. And Job lived 140 years and saw his sons and his grandsons for 4 generations. And Job died an old man and full of days. Whoa. So the beginning of that story was a little rough. God's healing word for all time, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden. And what does he say? I will give you rest. I hope that we have learned from this tonight. I hope that we've seen something in terms of what Job had. Those descriptions are powerful. He did lose everything. And he waited on God and he worshiped God. Even though we get a little funky in there, may have misunderstood some things. He was even a little self-righteous at certain times. We're going to go over that next week. But all of that wasn't held against him by God, because his basis was that he loved God more than life itself, and he worshiped God even in the worst of his turmoil and loss. We need to take that as example. God, I'm not asking you to be like Job. Our prayer is, don't make me like Job. I want to be like Jesus. Help me, Lord, to live smoothly, to have your spirit flowing through me, to not let the trials and challenges of this life turn my eye or my head in any way. You turn everything around. What was meant for evil against you, God will turn around for good. I bless the Lord. So next week we're going to do a little bit more on Job. God bless you, and we'll see you then.